death in Ice Valley is returning.
We've been trying to find answers to an unsolved mystery.
And now we're back with an update on the case.
We'll be here to tell you more about it at the end of this podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Witness History podcast from the BBC World Service with me, Alex Last. And in today's episode, we go back to 1961 and the publication of the satirical anti-war novel Catch-22 by the American author Joseph Heller, which became a cult classic, sold millions, and even created a new term for the English language.
We're in the Catch-22 here. We can't win.
It's a Catch-22 in that political game.
As far as we can see, it's a Catch-22 situation.
It's a Catch-22.
And they're in a Catch-22 situation.
Kalsum's going to be in a Catch-22.
But the government's in a Catch-22 as well, isn't it?
The book that gave the world the term Catch-22 was written in the 1950s by Joseph Heller and published in 1961. It encapsulated the absurdity of war. It was funny, satirical, and tragic too. The story is set in World War II, but it's not really about that war. Its inspiration was America in the 1950s during the Cold War, a time which saw the US fighting in Korea, an anti-communist witch hunt at home, the growth of corporate America.
Well, it was directed to America in the 1950s. It was directed against war, but against the wars that were different from World War II.
It's about America. It reflects my attitude toward America after the war. It was confusing that the ideals we had were collapsing, were not justified, that management in politics, in government, in corporate, in private enterprise was irrational, inhuman, not concerned with other people, in the emphasis on fame, advancement, public relations.
Catch-22 was Joseph Heller's first novel. Heller was the child of immigrants who'd grown up in a poor family in Brooklyn, New York. At 19, he joined the U.S. Army Air Corps and became a bombardier in a bomber squadron operating in the Mediterranean during the Second World War. He was stationed in Corsica. This experience becomes the setting for Catch-22. But despite what you'd think if you'd read the book, Heller had a pretty good time.
It was not a frightening experience. I was too young and too dumb and too stupid and too uneducated to think that the war was really a war. I was overseas for 10 months. I flew 60 missions, most of which were relatively easy. It was late in the war, and most of which I enjoyed. I enjoyed the experience very, very much. Only on my 37th mission, when a man in my plane was wounded in the leg, when I went back to take care of him, I saw this gaping wound. And from then to the completion of my missions of 60, I was terrified on almost everyone.
After the war, Heller went to university on the GI Bill, which opened up higher education to ex-servicemen. There he began to write and sell short stories. But needing real money, he went to work in advertising in New York. He only started writing Catch-22 in 1953, at the age of 30.
I learned enough as a student to learn that the stories I'd written were not particularly distinctive and that I had nothing really to write about. I came back to New York, obtained a job as a copywriter in a small agency, and within a month or two, the ambition to write came back to me, and I thought I would try a novel. And the only idea for a novel that came to me was Catch-22, and the idea came to me exactly as it appeared in the book. I did not consciously say, I'm going to write about my war experiences. I did not consciously say, I'm going to take a form that would be partly surrealistic and fantastic and mix the comic with the morbid. The idea just came to me. The next day at work, I wrote a first chapter. I rewrote it in a week and then mailed it to my literary agent. And for the next few months, the ideas just kept flooding me, into me. The names of the characters, the variety, that's where it came from. I cannot explain it.
Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Writing after work and at weekends, it took him 8 years to finish the book. The novel he created was unusual. The timeline was mixed up, though carefully structured. It focused on the fortunes, or rather misfortunes, of a US bomber squadron based on an island in the Mediterranean during the Second World War. Its anti-hero Yusarian is a bombardier like Heller was, but in the book, Yasserian wants out. As his superiors constantly up the number of missions he and his friends have to fly, he becomes increasingly desperate. Determined to live, he tries to find ways to get out of flying, but at each turn he's thwarted by absurd self-promoting superiors or maddening military bureaucracy. That gives rise to the title of the book, Catch-22, A Paradoxical Rule. Its first big appearance is when Yasserian asks a doctor whether he or his colleague Orr could get out of flying if they were declared crazy, which surely they were. The answer, of course, was yes, but there was a catch. Not wanting to fly a dangerous mission proved you were sane.
There was only one catch, and that was Catch-22, which specified that a concern for one's own safety in the faces of dangers that were real and immediate was the process of a rational mind. Orr was crazy and could be grounded. All he had to do was ask, and as soon as he did, he would no longer be crazy and would have to fly more missions. Orr would be crazy to fly more missions, and sane if he didn't. But if he was sane, he had to fly them. If he flew them, he was crazy and didn't have to. But if he didn't want to, he was sane and had to. Yasserian was moved very deeply by the absolute simplicity of this clause of Catch-22 and let out a respectful whistle. "That's some catch, that Catch-22," he observed. "It's the best there is," Dr. Nico agreed.
The rule Catch-22 reappears throughout the book in different forms, trapping characters in paradoxical, no-win situations. But in the drafts, it was not Catch-22. It was actually Catch-18, until it was changed at the very last minute.
Much better-known author than I was then, I was going to publish a novel called Mila 18. And the publishers, in their wisdom and experience, reasoned that the American book-buying public would not want to read two novels with the number 18 in the title in the same season. So Catch-18 was changed to Catch-22.
But there's more to Catch-22 than funny, tragic attempts to survive the crazy logic of the military. The real human cost of war also haunts the book, as does Heller's concerns about post-war corporate America. For in reality, the most powerful character in the book is the squadron's mess officer, Milo Minderbinder, a wheeler dealer who creates a vast multinational black market corporation, which both he and the military hierarchy soon deem to be more important than the lives of their own men.
The global economy, the international business community, is touched on in Catch-22 in the activities of Milo Minderbinder. And I also touched on something which had been touched on by other writers, and that is the powerful, powerful, powerful influence of money on governmental activities, which includes military activities.
The book was finally published in 1961. In America, it got a mixed reception, though in Britain it was a big hit. It was only when the paperback came out that it really took off in the States. Perhaps because its satirical, cynical tone and anti-war message chimed with the mood of the younger generation emerging in the 1960s.
By the time the book was published, most educated Americans and most educated English people had come around to that same attitude of skeptical examination of political figures that's presented in Catch-22. I think I was very fortunate. It was dumb luck that led me to take so long to write that book.
And its appeal only grew as America became stuck in the quagmire of the Vietnam War. Catch-22 sold in the millions.
And I've been told by people who were back from Vietnam, Americans, who said that this was a book that was most widely read there. So many people have told me when they reported for combat duty, the man they were replacing, this would be officers as well as enlisted men, would give them a paperback copy of Catch-22 and says, if you want to know what it's about or what you're doing here, read this.
Joseph Heller died in 1999 at the age of 76. His other novels never had the impact or the acclaim that greeted his first book, but then that would have been a lot to ask.
I don't feel I'm being immodest in saying the book is still relevant and enjoyable to people today. You want me to tell you why it works? It's a very good book.
Joseph Heller, ending this edition of the Witness History Podcast with me, Alex Last. We have more than 1,000 episodes for you to listen to on all sorts of subjects, so do have a browse in our archive. And to help you out a bit, we have some specially curated collections on our website. Just search online for BBC Witness History. That's all from me for now, so until the next time, thanks again for listening. Goodbye.
Death in Ice Valley is back.
She's laying with her head down there.
Fake passports, the wigs, the unprescripted glasses.
There are somebody living who knows more about this case.
I'm Marja Tigroff.
And I'm Neil McCarthy.
And we've been trying to find answers to an unsolved mystery.
Why all this secrecy?
It was like a cover-up.
Now, 1 year on, we're back with an update on the case.
Yes, with new leads to follow from you, our listeners.
This is maybe the first lead of evidence we have in almost 48 years.
More on the original investigation.
They were being told, don't work it anymore, or don't go into that.
And maybe even a brand new eyewitness.
I feel I met this lady.
That's a special episode of Death in Ice Valley, recorded live in Bergen in Norway from the BBC World Service and NRK.
Catch up with the whole series now, and you'll also find our new episode.
Just search for Death in Ice Valley wherever you get your podcasts.